It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, Alex are all here. We're going to talk about that great article about Johnny Ive in The New Yorker, give you some of the best tidbits. And we'll talk about the rumor that Apple is building a car and find out why Andy and Akko will not say a word. It's all coming up next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 442, recorded Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. Cookies. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you monitor, control, and automate your home from wherever you are using your smartphone. Right now, SmartThings is offering Mac Break Weekly listeners 10% off any home security or solution kit and get free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/twit and use the offer code TWIT at checkout. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions, and they'll send them right to your door. See what's on the menu this week. Get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help the small business owner save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the Macintosh news. And I was just thinking, you know, there's a fine line between chat, punditry, and informed analysis and punditry. And this is the show, actually many of our shows, but this show is a good example of we have fun, we chat, we talk, we speculate, but it's some of the most informed people in the Mac world, in the Apple world. And that starts, of course, with Annie Inako of the Chicago Sun-Times, who's been covering Apple for how long?
Oh, God, 25 years. Okay. I started my first paid column when I was still in school, so I just only recently realized, oh, my God, I've been doing this for a quarter century.
It's amazing. Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore, he's the youngster in the pack. You've only been doing this how long?
Since the iPhone days?
Yeah.
I'm new Apple.
Boy, you really are. How amazing, amazing. They're still wet behind the ears, and yet he is absolutely, iMore absolutely is one of the best places to go if you want to get more and the best analysis. And, of course, from Pittsburgh, PA, where he is snowed in. He's in front of a field of snow. We're looking out his window right now.
This is actually a clear window. you may look like a wall, but it's actually a clear window just stacked up with snow.
Alex Lindsay of PixelCore, creator of MacBreak. When did you create... The first Mac Break?
I think that the first Mac Break, I believe, was 2006. Is that? I have to backtrack.
No, I think it's older than that.
2005 or 2006.
This is episode 442 of Mac Break Weekly, which means that's 8 years there.
But I think the Mac Break, the show,
was at least a year or two before that.
I think it was 2008 because the 2006 because 2005. I think you were doing Twit. I was kind of doing.
Yeah, we started Twit in 2000. One of the reasons I ask is here's Mac Break Weekly number one, August 12th, 2006.
Yeah, so I think it was 2006. It was the I can't remember whether Weekly became before.
No, Mac Break came before Mac Break Weekly.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mac Break, the first episode of Mac Break was January of that year. That was 2006.
Oh, because it was Mac Break, Mac World Expo, of course.
Yeah, and then we did that with Emery Wells and
Justine.
You and I. No, we didn't. Justine came 2007, so she was the. She came the next year.
The funny thing is, Alex has spent a significant amount of money on a very fancy Sony Cine Alta that was fancy because it was a 1080p video camera.
Well, and it was 444. It was 444 uncompressed. So to pull green screen, it was built for visual effects. And I had bought it on sale for $82,000.
What? Say that again.
I bought it on sale for $82,000.
That's more than we paid for every camera, all 40 cameras in this studio.
I paid it back in a year, I will say.
I'm impressed. Well, you got your money's worth.
Yeah, no, I got
it. But it was so hard to edit 1080p that it took weeks to get the first episode out. And then no one could watch it.
I think the second episode was actually, the second episode was called The Road to 1080p, which was this, which is the most viewed Mac break, except for the Hi-Fi, for whatever reason. Yeah. Remember the Hi-Fi?
Yeah.
Except for that one, it was the most viewed Mac break.
The most viewed Mac break was the Apple Hi-Fi?
Yeah, it was the Apple, the special, the only one that was more than that was when I did that little phone, it wasn't really a Mac break, but it was the, I did a little camera rig for the 3GS that had video. And I built this goofy camera thing, and Wired picked it up, and it had millions of views. And so the Road to 1080p was the second most viewed behind those two. But it was literally, I couldn't get the show out. So the Road to 1080p was me putting segments out talking about it while I tried to figure out how to get a show out the door. So to keep people from being really upset with me.
That's truly amazing.
So there it is, April 13th, 2006.
That's the number two.
Yeah, it says number three. Two. I'm not finding a number one on the list. There's two.
Nobody could watch it. I'm seeing three twos. I remember trying to watch it on a high-powered Mac Pro, and it would drop every other frame.
Right. Yeah, and that was, yeah. Yes.
So, by the way, now even your phone will play back 1080p video. I mean, anything.
See, everyone finally caught up. I was just
ahead of your time.
I'm over it though. Now I'm moving to 4K.
Oh, 4K is the old hat. Why not just go 8K?
Well, we'll take a look. Maybe at NAB, we'll start thinking about production 8K. But 4K, I think 4K pipeline will be this year's project.
So, I think we should start with the Apple Car.
Zoom, zoom.
Suddenly, and by the way, somebody said, well, why are you calling Mac Break Weekly? Well, at the time, Macs were pretty important.
I know. It wasn't an iPhone.
This was before the iPhone, iPad.
Before there was an iPhone.
Pretty much the only thing that Apple made was Macs.
Right.
So that's why. But it covers everything now.
Seems like a good idea at the time.
Jean-Louis Gasset yesterday, in his Monday note, poo-pooed the idea of an Apple Car. He said this is the, basically all stems from this one Wall Street Journal article in which they called it Project Titan. And they said the journal said 100 people working on an Apple Car in Cupertino. Jean-Louis, who is a former Apple president for Apple International and has, I think, done a good job covering Apple in his Monday note at MondayNote.com. Says, at first I didn't pay much attention to the Apple Car rumors. I saw them as just another wave of clickbait along the lines of the wiped out Apple TV set, which I had that same
and
reaction.
The Apple Watch, all the same thing.
Well, but that's the funny thing. They did come out with a watch. He says the company has the money, $178 billion in the bank. It could easily afford to build a car factory. In fact, they're cheaper than fabs. Microprocessor fabs, only a couple of billion dollars. But he points out, and I have to say, this is the same thing that I and others said when we heard rumors that Apple was going to get in the phone business and the TV business, that it was a business that you wouldn't want to get into. Ford, which is the most successful U.S. car company, had $34 billion in sales last quarter, but only made $835 million. Apple made $18 billion. It's a big difference. Why would Apple want to get into the car business? We'll start with you, Renee. Is Apple getting into the car business?
Let me just preface it by saying that what surprised me most about this is the very same people who were ardent that Apple would never make a watch, would never make a phone, or were absolutely certain that they would, are using that same absolutism to talk about the car. I would think that you would learn after all these. Apple's never going to make a watch.
Never learn anything.
No. Just hedge a little, people.
But they didn't do a TV.
They chose not to. I mean, they prototyped a TV. They have several TV prototypes. So the interesting thing about this is I think what the stories we're seeing now are conflating several things. Apple's working on batteries. Apple's working on the second generation of CarPlay, maybe even the third generation of CarPlay right now. There's a lot of things going on. Apple has to make something next eventually, whether it's 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. There'll be something next. There's pen rumors floating around. There's still the television in the back. There's still the cars. And it's a very short list of things that are interesting. interesting for Apple to approach next. And a car, you know, Apple would be literally negligent if the car wasn't sitting on a list somewhere in Cupertino with somebody going, well, let's take a look at this. No, it's not the right time. No, for all these reasons, we shouldn't do it. Or, hey, this is interesting. Let's put a couple guys onto it. Or, hey, let's explore this.
Well, what is 100? Where does that fall in the spectrum if there are 100 people working on it?
Again, so it depends. How do you define the car? Because what Apple's working on now for CarPlay could easily fit into a more extended car project. The stuff that Apple's building for extensibility fit right into the watch project. So it's hard to – the way Apple works is those numbers are hard for me to parse. I think, again, it's like a bunch of people in a black room with an elephant touching different parts of it and calling it different things.
Okay.
But there is absolutely –
so there's smoke. There's definitely smoke, but we don't know what kind of fire.
Well, it's exactly like the television. They will take it to a certain point, and then they'll decide whether that's going to be their next product. Apple does one thing at a time. They don't do a ton of new products. So at some point, they'll need – and some people are saying this is a rumor to get Wall Street to think that there's even more growth potential for Apple because Wall Street's not certain what comes after the watch. And all of these things play a part in why these stories spread. But – oh, there's also the mapping thing going on. So people are conflating the trucks that are doing the mapping with the Apple car.
Is that what those Dodge vans – we've seen two of them now. Is that what they're doing is mapping?
I mean, Street View has been around for a long time. Apple's not a dumb company. I keep going back to this thing that if we can sit here on this show and say it would be interesting if Apple did this, there's almost certainly been someone at Apple who's gone, it'd be interesting if we did this and then done a really good job looking at the numbers based on it.
You agree with Renee Andinaka?
I wish to abstain from conversation about the Apple car project.
He was briefed on it. That means he was briefed on it. He knows something.
Oh, that's not the reason why. I can talk about the reason why, but that would derail the conversation.
Okay,
and we can talk.
You don't want to have anything to say about it.
I don't want to talk about the Apple car project.
Okay, Alex,
I just want to abstain. That's all.
I understand, and I'll ask you about it later. And Alex, what do you think?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, so there may be smoke, and there's definitely probably kindling around. So it seems like those things make a lot of sense. I think for Apple, when you look at where Apple can go from a consumer company as it keeps on getting bigger and bigger, it's where are consumers spending a lot of time that is fundamentally broken, and with only a few exceptions, the car industry is pretty broken. And so, you know, it just we get kind of this goulash. It's kind of where the phone industry was. Now, I think Tesla is probably making the most headroads, and there's some rumors that Apple may just give up and buy Tesla, which they could do, you know, with pocket change. So that might be a possibility. I think Elon Musk
if Elon would sell it, though. I mean, doesn't he have some say in it, or maybe not?
I think it would depend. You know, I think it could make a lot of sense. I mean,
could
I
do
think
a hostile takeover.
Well, I think Tesla has with 100 engineers working on this and possibly more, you know, if Apple keeps on building towards it, Tesla looks at two different things. One are they going to go after the same market that Tesla is going after aggressively from the size of Apple? So, you know, the question is, do you want to sell to them or do you want to compete with them? And that, you know, competing with them doesn't work for most companies very well. So so that might be the thought process that Tesla needs to think through. I think that it makes a lot of sense. I look at, you know, cars is definitely a thing. I think that, but I think Apple can move into a lot of places like banking. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Apple Pay is the beginning of, you know, testing the waters and seeing how far they could go down that path. I mean, once you break people away from their credit card, you know, there's no reason not to step in the middle. So, I think there's a lot of places that Apple can go that are a lot bigger than the markets that they're already in. I think the car industry could be one, even though Ford is doing really well. I think that Apple could get a much larger much larger percentage of the market if they did it right. I do think that they probably do, you know, one car that only turns left, you know, because you shouldn't really turn right ever, or only turns right because you really shouldn't turn left.
I joked on Sunday that Apple wouldn't have an accelerator or a gas pedal. It would just have, at first I thought one pedal that push forward to go forward, push back to brake. But then I thought, why have a pedal at all? Just go like that.
We'll have a knob. It'll be the digital knob.
One of the things I'll be really interested to see is if they go into, you know, autonomous driving, because I think that a lot of times right now I think a lot of the discussion is all or nothing, you know, that we want the car, you know, Google doesn't want to give you a steering wheel, you know, and other people say, well, you'll never get a
self-driving car. They don't. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that what makes way more sense is that it will work on the highway, you know, so you drive until you get to the highway and then you let go. It's
that
much
makes
easier
a lot
to
of sense.
The highway.
I would do
it,
that.
As a user, I'd much prefer. Yeah. To do that last 10 miles and then the time that really burns you is the highway, it's the traffic jams, it's that kind of thing. And the car could manage that very effectively.
It's worth noting that at least a couple times Steve Jobs said that he wished that he'd had enough time and energy to make a car. So it's obviously, it's again, it's one of those things that is of interest to the kind of people who work at Apple and make the kind of things that Apple ships. So it's it whether it's immediate interest or not, Apple licenses stuff. Like they license AirPlay, they license CarPlay, they license HomeKit. They're not making thermometers, they're not making, thermostats, they're not making light bulbs, but they're making frameworks for that. Right now they're making software for cards. Apple sometimes likes to make their own hardware, but with things like Apple Play, AirPlay, they're letting television companies still make the television. So I think it's one of those places where I wouldn't be shocked if Apple did it, but I don't expect to see it, you know, later this year.
Okay, Andy, derail the conversation.
I've been thinking about this all weekend. I had an immediate reaction to this on Friday. My immediate reaction was that there had been some murmurs in the press in the past 2 or 3 or 4 weeks about Apple working on a car. This is probably the first one that had substantive details. I just want the time. On Friday, I found the timing very, very weird. You have this huge story that you know is going to get a lot of views. Not only that, but it's going to start a whole bunch of conversations. As a matter of fact, it was a trending topic on Twitter within about an hour or 2 hours. When do you decide to post this story? Wall Street Journal chose to post it after the close of trading on a Friday, on a 3-day weekend when the markets were also going to be closed on Monday, which happened to be the weekend before the New Yorker was going to post a really, really great 17,000-word article that was very, very useful and informative. I'll talk about that.
Yes, we are going to talk about that. That's the next topic. Yep.
At a time 2 months before Apple is launching Apple Watch, and wants to start getting information out about that. And
so you think it's kind of to sabotage Apple a little bit?
No. Quite the opposite. I don't know that this was a controlled leak. The timing I think is very, very odd. And it hooks, and I've spent the weekend trying to shake down more details, including simple things like, you know, for instance, last night at 9 p.m., the Wall Street Journal posted an article about CrossFit training. So it's not as though they're on the regular schedule where they're trying to say, make sure let's post things at 11 a.m. or 1 p.m.
Right. Yeah,
so I might be totally off base here. But
so, okay, I'm going to read between the lines.
What I'm saying here is that we have often had these stories, quote, leak to the Wall Street Journal, to the New York Times.
Yeah.
It is always a story about how Apple is working on something incredible and wonderful. And my God, aren't we all excited about this upcoming project?
Right.
We also got a story that we're going to be talking about later on, I'm sure, about how there were problems in the middle of the development of the Apple Watch. You notice that there was no leak about the story that Apple is trying to make a watch, but they're failing, because every time they try to put a sensor in that reads health data, it doesn't work properly. We don't get leaks of that nature. But you will often at times like this get stories that find their way out about how, oh, look how this wonderful project Apple's working on. And, oh, you know, it's possible that the new iPhone is going to have a really massive screen this year. Oh, good. You get the feeling that there is not a huge internal investigation at Apple trying to find out just who the hell spilled the beans on this top secret project.
It did say minivan, though, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll wind this up because this could turn into a 2-hour-long rant that's unfocused and makes people shout, "Hey, Grandpa, shut up!"
Go ahead.
I just feel that, and I'm winding it up here. I just feel as though there is a this is not a story about an announced Apple product. This is a story about a product that Apple may or may not make sometime in the next year or 30 years or never. And given the possibility that this is given the sketchiness of the origin of this story, I feel as though I don't want to give my time to this story.
Got it.
Because you know, I have been doing this for 25 years. I hope to do this for 25 years more. We lost David Carr last week. Phenomenally talented columnist. I didn't know him, but my God, I was such a fan of his writing. We lost Roger Ebert a few years ago. He was 70 years old, and he was a columnist for 50 years. And he still inspires me every single day. That I want his track record. I want to have 50 years worth of work behind me so that when I finally stop writing for whatever reason, someone might look at what I did and said that, well, here is this guy's point of view, and here's what he thinks about the world, and here are things that he thought was important. I don't want there to be a risk that someone will say, my God, Andy Notko, he was a very useful tool for very large multi-billion dollar tech companies. There's just a stink around this that makes me say, you know what? I'm not going to talk about the Apple.
One that was really curious was the Business Insider when they said someone, an Apple employee, emailed them saying that, don't go to Tesla. We have a lot of interesting car stuff going on here, which is a very unusual source for a...
There's a possibility that there was enough people talking in the past month that Apple decided, well, let's at least put some real facts out there, even if we don't have to stand behind this project, just to get ahead of this. Again, I'm not saying I'm not saying that I know that Apple planted this story. I know that Apple was trying to get all kinds of great publicity and get journalists to talk about this. I don't know that for sure. All I'm saying is that I fortunately am not like a 4-article-a-day news site. I don't have the responsibility of talking about everything that comes out there. I feel as though this would not be part of my mission to be talking about this under these circumstances.
Deal. And I will point people to the August column, which we mentioned at the time, by Mark Gurman, Seeing Through the Illusion, Understanding Apple's Mastery of the Media, for further details.
that article has a lot of problems, too. But
okay. That's but it's a starting point. On the other hand,
I don't endorse that. I don't endorse the central premise of that. Of that column.
All right. On the other hand, it is the case Apple has a lot of cash.
So much cash, Leo, the cash.
And the rumor now is very strong, probably mostly echoes of this original Wall Street Journal story. By the way, we do know very well that the Wall Street Journal is the go-to place when Apple wants to, you know, raise a false flag. And there's now, as a result, a lot of chatter. Jason Calacanis wrote an article on Friday saying Apple will buy Tesla for $85 billion. That's a lot of money to spend.
Yeah.
And M&A talk rumors a couple years ago.
Yes. Yeah. If you search for Apple Tesla, you can go back. I'm sorry, $75 billion. You can go back in time and see articles about Apple meeting with Tesla a year ago.
It'd be interesting to compare the Wall Street Journal articles about Apple making a car with articles about making televisions and watches and see how many of them actually came out. And if there were, you know, many of them that didn't ship, just to see how accurate those stories end up being.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I think I'm gonna honor Andy. I think you're absolutely right, and I'm gonna honor your inclinations on this one. And we'll move on to the Johnny Ive story in the New Yorker, which is fascinating. I do want to talk about the story about the Apple Watch sensors that couldn't be put in, not just because they couldn't be made to work or they use too much battery life. I think the other story is that the FDA would have required approval for some of these. And you do remember it wasn't so long ago that Apple met with the FDA with an unannounced agenda. And I have a feeling it was something like, do you really want to regulate this stuff? Because we would love to put it in a watch. But we'll talk about
the
that.
The hairy arm bias, Leo. The bias against hairy arms.
Yeah. Dang it.
Those of us built for winter warfare. The prejudice must end.
No more hairy arms. I actually am falling prey to the... all of this stuff. I can't wait to get an Apple Watch. I, for one, embrace our new overlords. Our show today brought to you by SmartThings. This would be another great thing to tie into your Apple Watch. You already can tie it into your iPhone, your Android device. SmartThings smartens your house, starting with the SmartThings Hub. This was a Kickstarter project, really kind of inspired. The folks at SmartThings, the young guys who created SmartThings, said, you know, it would be really great. It'd be so much easier to make a smart home if everything would talk to everything else. But they don't. Your Sonos doesn't talk to your Hue, which doesn't talk to your Schlage lock, which doesn't talk to your X10 controller, which doesn't talk to your Zigbee controller. But the SmartThings Hub unifies it all and then talks to your smartphone. And you can use your smartphone to tell your house what to do. CNET's highest rated smart home system, it's SmartThings. They were awarded CES's 2015 Editor's Choice Award from Time Magazine. It lets you monitor, control, and automate your home anywhere using your smartphone. Your lights, your locks, your thermostats, your home security, all connected through a single app. And intuitive controls allow you to set the rules on your smart home. They have Windows Phone apps, too. I want to give them credit. Kudos for that. With SmartThings, you can customize the way your smart devices talk to one another. So now, for instance, tap Good Night on your phone. The lights will turn off. The thermostat will turn down. Yes, it works with the Nest. It works with all the smart thermostats. Your doors will lock. Set your lamps to brighten each morning at sunrise or when you want to wake up. Even keep your home protected with smart things. Home security, motion detector, water detection. See all the modules? I got a ton of them here. I got a ton of them and more coming all the time from smart things. This is everything you need. Enable your speakers to broadcast barking dogs. Your Sonos suddenly goes, roof, if there's motion outside the house. Or just a welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out.
Welcome back.
Welcome home. You could actually put one of these doohickeys in your kids, these little things in your kids, these presence detectors in your kids' backpacks, and it'll know when the kids come home. Isn't that cool? Turn on the microwave. Stick a hot dog in there. Smart Things. Here's the deal. If you go to smartthings.com/twit right now, take a look at the home security and the solution kits. These all come with the hub and then the appropriate devices to solve a problem, a solution, or to secure your home. You'll get free shipping in the U.S. and 10% off when you use the offer code TWIT. SmartThings.com/TWIT. Offer code TWIT to save 10%. Really is the way to go. A minivan-like vehicle. See, that's the one that stopped me cold in my tracks.
It's a minivan, right, Leo?
Yeah, I'm not buying the minivan. It'll be the
I don't
first.
Want the minivan. Thing I don't want.
Well,
a
you
minivan.
Have trucks. You have cars.
Next project
and you have
is Apple mom jeans.
Mom jeans. Yeah, wasn't that the funniest thing on Saturday Night Live? I loved the mom jeans.
I think that Apple might just, you know, if they did it, they would define an entirely new species of car.
Yes.
I don't know what that would be. But it wouldn't be definable inside of compact or full size.
It's got a trunk. It's got a hood. It's got a door. Are you getting it yet?
Trunk, hood, door, trunk, hood, door. New Yorker magazine published what I would now consider the definitive profile, absent some great book coming out, on Johnny Ive this week.
That was a book.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, it's a New Yorker article.
A novella.
Oh, my goodness.
You recommend it? Well worth reading, right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Johnny Ive and the Future of Apple, the Shape of Things to Come. We learn such things as Johnny and Mark Newsom, his design buddy, hate the way American cars look. That's why they drive. Johnny drives a Bentley. He said, what am I fighting it for? Of course, we should point out the Bentley's owned by Volkswagen, but that's okay. What am I fighting this for? What is I forgot. Mark Newsom drives a Rolls. I can't remember now.
They all drive all the British cars, Leo.
They all drive all the British cars. I was interested to see that Lorraine Powell Jobs, Steve's widow, was at, for instance, the Apple Watch announcement, very much still involved, as was their son, Reed, who's 23 now. One morning in September, I was talking with a few friends, including, Chris Martin of Coldplay and Stephen Fry, the British actor and writer, in a courtyard beside a community college hall a few miles from Apple's headquarters in Cupertino. This, of course, is the Flint Center announcement of the iPhone 6. Apparently, Johnny Ive, there was a Playmobil figure made of him by his design colleagues, and he has that on his lock screen of his phone. We're learning much about Johnny Ive we never knew before. He owns the 20-seat Gulfstream G5 that Steve Jobs used to own. Lorraine sold it to Johnny in 2011 after Jobs' death. He calls Puff Daddy Snoop Shawnee Sean for reasons no one really understands.
That's how inside he is. He has access to Puff Daddy's next name before anybody else has it.
Sean Combs, the rapper. What did we learn about Steve Jobs? Why don't you? I'm sorry, Johnny Ives. Why don't you guys summarize? Andy, why don't you kick things off? What did you find interesting in this article? It's quite a long article.
I found it interesting that apparently J.J. Abrams consulted with him on the design of the new lightsabers for the new Star Wars movies
over drinks.
They're buddies.
Yeah.
They're buddies.
That to me is like 10 times cooler than like designing a watch or designing a car. It's like, no, if you get to have a say in anything, any key prop in the Star Wars universe, okay, you get 5 free passes and 2 of them can include murders if you want.
How about you? What was your what's a salient tidbit from this Rene Ritchie?
I liked a lot of it. I liked a lot of the little details. I had to read it two or three times to pick them up, but it was amazing the level of detail they went into, like including things like the iPhone 4 prototype that was larger that they've never really talked about before. Because, like, you know, Apple did test larger phones, but they didn't like them as products. They didn't go ahead with them. And he talks about that a little bit. They name a lot of names, which is unusual for them. They talk about the process that goes on inside Infinite Loop 2, which they haven't really talked about before.
They play they play what their office manager calls Euro douche pop during design sessions in the design center, apparently. Yeah,
well, I mean, they walk in
Rapture.
And the guy has people machine for him these little geometric patterns, and he either uses them for a coffee coaster or for a new speaker design. I mean, it just depends on how they work out.
It must be kind of Oz in there, I tell you. Did you read the article, Alex, yet?
I did. I think all I was left was I really want to work in that design facility. You know, 3,000 square feet of fun. You know, it's like CNC mills and figuring out like it sounds like it's a pretty. I mean, what I was left with is the designers that are there are high pressured only because they're really worried about what they do. You know, they're full of internal designer angst. But there's a lot of things that they're just fiddling with and trying to figure out and you know, willing to go, you know, do 1,000 iterations of stuff. And they have all the tools, you know, it's just an interesting, position to be in, to be the design group for, you know, for this company, you know, that is based on design and you'd think that they even have, I guess I felt like it would be bigger, a factory or something.
Yeah, 3,000 square feet's not that big, is it?
It's
especially
not.
Considering it's filled with milling machines. Right. I've said, hey, we make things. That's what we do. And we want the machine. We don't want to have to send it out to the shop. We want to make them right here. Yeah. And so they said to the degree that the noise and the pollution would allow, they've included them.
Wasn't it amazing how much Johnny Ive is involved in? Like, he was involved with the direction of the commercial, with the Apple Store remake, with the watch, with the rebuilding of the campus. Like, there's list after list of major, ginormous projects at Apple, and he was there for every one of them.
Yeah, it became pretty clear that he's been Apple's number two guy for many, many years, since Steve came back, really.
Well, on top of everything else, you would think that a company of Apple's size and the importance of the stuff they're doing, that they would have more of a design department, a design building, but it really just seems like here is a group of people that communicate with each other very, very well. There is a very much a group brain sort of thing. And although Johnny Ive is certainly the spearhead of that department, you get the impression that every idea is the residue of multiple points of view. The people who just talk very, very open in a very clubby environment. At least that's the impression that you get from this profile.
They talk about the work tables, which inspired the Apple Store tables, although they're a little bit higher than that, apparently. I've spent a lot of time thinking about the height, a lot of studies. Each table has one product category, one product on it, or a product part or a product concept. They quote designer there, a former Lamborghini designer, Hoenig, that's saying a table can get crowded with a lot of different ideas, maybe problem solving for one particular feature. Then one day, all the clutter is gone and the winner is left.
Much like ourselves.
Just like this.
You almost feel scared for the other products on that table. Is there going to be like a Pixar movie about like the objects on that table, what they do at night, worrying about, I don't know, he was looking at me with he had that look on his face.
The author of
my peace with God.
The author of the profile, Ian Parker, actually was invited into a rare invitation into the product design studio before the watch was announced. So there were some tables covered with sheets of gray silk. And Parker writes, I knew only that the future would be no taller than an electric kettle. And that we now know what was under those sheets. He said the cloth covering the table nearest the door was curiously flat. This is actually complicated, I've said, feeling through the material. This will make sense later. I'm not messing with you at all, I promise. It's really a great read, and I think that everyone I know who's read it agrees it's accurate and accurately reflects their understanding and knowledge of how Johnny and Mark work.
And you get the feeling that Mark's there sort of, I don't know if you can equate it to Jimmy Iovine being in Eddie Q's org, where you have other experts now maybe helping them take some of the load off or helping shore them up so that they don't become a single point of explosion at some point.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the other things that I think is interesting is you really have seen how Apple, and this, I think this is one of their secrets, has been able to turn design first engineering, you know, and it's been, I think, a very slow process of, you know, the comments that they just skinned, you know, the skinned the iPod to a point where the designers are really coming up with what it's going to do. And then they're having engineering figure out how to do that. And so I think that that's a reversal from, I think, most companies.
Yeah, Parker writes that I've linked the studio's work to NASA, like the Apollo program. The creation of Apple products required, quote, invention after invention after invention that you would never be conscious of, but that was necessary to do something that was new. This is not skinning. This is...
They make the machines that make the machines. Yeah. A lot of their time is spent designing equipment to make the stuff that they want to make, which is...
Yeah, I think they said somewhere in the article where the estimate was, and no one knows exactly what it was, but let's start building all of these unibodies so we'll get 60,000 CNC mills.
Yeah.
Sort it out. And again, when people talk about why does Apple not give money back to investors, you know, it allows Apple to do big things like that. without really feeling like it's going to be even a scratch, you know, we'll spend $1 billion or $2 billion. And that gives them a lot of competitive advantage when they can just make those decisions without worrying about the bottom line and knowing that it'll turn out in the long term, but not worried about the short term.
There is this kind of a meta text or subtext to this, as Andy kind of pointed out, that they were given unprecedented access. Ian talked to two designers, Jody Akana, whose specialty is color, and Bart Andre, who has the most design patents of any Apple employee, and says, neither had ever previously spoken to a journalist, ever. So I think Andy, your point is there is some timing to all of this. That this is part of a drumbeat that Apple is orchestrating. And Apple has to prove this access, and there was a reason why all of a sudden this article appears at this time.
Yeah, and let me just make the difference that this is a valuable.
This is not BS. This is not.
I'm sorry. I don't want to contaminate things by saying that things are BS or not.
Okay.
I'm just saying that this is a different
plan.
Thing.
It's not a plan.
It's open and Apple's on the record. Mm-hmm. It's not as though like we hired people from PETA with experience at infiltrating businesses with cameras on their heads.
Right.
And we pulled out this report. This really is. This is definitely an approved piece. But it's giving value to everyone. I mean, it's not just the details that come out. I mean, I'm joking about. I was genuinely surprised and pleased by the lightsaber information, but it's kind of like Renee said, it's not just the details, it's the larger context of here is how Apple seems to work and here are the relationships between people and it is an insight, I think, a little bit into how they think. It's not, I mean, I've toured the design centers of a bunch of different companies, and it's not as though it's unusual for a design studio to have really impressive fab equipment right in the studio with them. But it does seem unusual, the level of playfulness, for lack of a better word, that is shown in this article.
I think Bono wrote that the people who work in the design lab genuinely love working there and genuinely love Johnny Ive. Only two people in 15 years have left the studio. And Johnny says, you can't get people this good to work just for money, which is true. They have to really be invested in what they're doing.
Well, and I think one of the things that these design studios, I mean, I've been to a couple different ones, not the Apple one, but a couple different ones where you're like kind of the design center for a variety of different companies. And almost all of them are pretty low pressure to some degree. I mean, they're all producing something, but they are, they all are a pretty tight knit group of people who like to work with each other, because it's just really hard to be creative without that. You know, it's just really hard to think up what the next thing's going to be. And I think that the companies that don't do that well, that are a grinder, don't come up with the kind of stuff that the companies that give their designers a little bit more space.
Well, and there's also, at least in the current Apple, and I think even to the Steve Jobs era, this reverence for design. The article talks about how when the designer enters the room in a meeting, it's like the high priest has entered. You know,
right.
That is the highest authority at Apple as a designer. From Ian Parker's article, team and New Yorker, team members work 12 hours a day and can't discuss work with friends. Each product has a lead designer, but almost everyone contributes to every project and shares the credit. Ive describes his role as lying between the two extremes of design leadership. He's not the source of all creativity, but nor does he merely assess the proposals of colleagues. The big ideas are often his, and he has an opinion about every detail. Team meetings are held in the kitchen two or three times a week, and Ive encourages candor, and they even joke back and forth about how everybody, including Ive, does bad designs. One of the designers says, I had one last week. Which one? Ive asks. The packaging thing, she said. That's true, Ive said. That was so bad. Apparently, she had proposed an ultra suede cloth inside the box for the gold version of the Apple Watch, and she's the color one. It should be orangey brown. And apparently that's not the color.
And that's how she came to be missing the tip of her left pinky.
Ive had objected to that color with comic hyperbole, comparing it to the carpeting in a dismal student apartment. In the same amused spirit, Akana had then said, so you don't like it. they also talk about Jobs a little bit. Jobs' reputation for merciless criticism was notorious. Ive recalled that years ago, after seeing colleagues crushed, he protested. Ives protested to Jobs. Jobs replied, well, why would you be vague? Arguing that ambiguity was a form of selfishness. You don't care about how they feel. You're being vain. You want them to like you. We've heard this story before, by the way. Good article. Any other points? I'm just scanning through it to see if there's any other. I mean, there's tons.
It was interesting with Lorraine Powell Jobs when they were talking about just the burden that Johnny Ive feels about having all these people in the company depend on him, but also all the products that he made and how that's not usually an artist's burden to bear.
That's right. She said that. Yeah. She said he's an artist, and it's not typical for an artist to be in that position. Johnny bears it, but apparently it's difficult. I'm sure the Bentley helps.
You know, and do you notice that there's some, I won't name names, but there's already some discussion about, look, Mr. Fancy Pants, he rides in a Bentley, not just a Bentley, but a chauffeured Bentley. And I'm like, really? This is what you took away from this article? That somebody who, A, has the money to have a car that he likes to spend time in, and also, like, his time is valuable enough that he'd rather spend his commute time in the back seat thinking and working than in the front seat driving.
He addresses this directly in the article.
This is what you're attacking Johnny Ive and Apple for?
He says he resisted buying a Bentley because of other connotations. He's always loved the big old school square Bentleys. The reasons, he says, are entirely design based. I resisted. And then I thought, this is the most bizarre vanity because I'm concerned that people perceive me to be this way and I'm not that way. So I'm going to.
And then Jeff Williams drives an old Camry.
Ive's verdict, according to Williams, is, oh, God.
Senior Vice President of Operations at Apple.
Oh, God. They really diss American car designs.
It's funny, though. You hear about what Ives drives. Phil Schiller is famous for his Audis and his Porsches. Eddie Kuefer, he's on the Ferrari board. Steve Jobs with the Mercedes-Benz. You don't hear about the operations guys like Bob Mansfield or Tim Cook or Jeff Williams.
It is
funny.
Imagine
Bob's Mansfield having like a pickup truck.
They all have enough. Yeah, you think of him as having a pickup truck for sure.
But he doesn't.
I mean, maybe he does. I don't know. But they have enough money to get a Bentley if they want. Big deal, right?
Yeah, it means, for God's sake.
It's like those people were complaining about Tim Cook's salary before the last quarterly results came in.
Yeah, he earned it. Yeah. $18 billion of profit. He earned it.
I people could be so petty about like what they're going to choose to complain about. It's like,
well, you know,
whatever they're paying anybody at Apple, double it. They've got the money and they probably earned it.
Hey, he commutes from San Francisco to Cupertino. I think he should have a driver in a Bentley.
That's
If I were in his job, I would commute in a camper. Okay, I would just basically.
So you could take a bath on the way in.
I would climb into the back. The driver would spend an hour. I could take another nap, get breakfast.
Your own bus.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Like the designers, a lot of the designers seem to live with those commutes and don't mind them. And a lot of the engineers and a lot of the other people seem to really want to live close because they don't want to commute. It's interesting how all these personalities balance out.
By the way, it's not clear from the article, but it sounds like Johnny Ive might have been the one that said lightsabers should also come out the side.
I think he downplayed that.
I think they said somewhere in the article, though, that he didn't design it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Ive says it was just a conversation and then explained that although he'd said nothing about cross guards, he had made a case for unevenness. I thought it would be interesting if it were less precise and just a bit more spitty.
Well, and I'm wondering if that, what that specifically, what I thought he was referring to in that part of the article was the, if you look at the energy that's running up the lightsaber, it's much grittier than the, it's almost like a fire more than a clean,
there
you
it
know,
is.
There's, yeah. There's, it's much, gritty. There's much more grit to it.
It's
yeah.
Gritty. Yeah.
Than you've seen it before, I still think the cross.
Also interesting part. That Lorraine Powell Jobs, Steve Jobs' widow, consults Johnny when she's trying to decide what kind of glasses to buy or flatware.
Don't you?
Wouldn't you? Wouldn't everyone though? Like if you, Johnny, if you could call Johnny and ask him what kind of glasses.
He's so
it.
Good on proportion and dimension. She said, really, if you ever need buttons for things designed for doors or lights, you should just stay in touch with him.
He's got a CNC machine. He doesn't have to pick a product.
I know. He's just like, I'll just print you one, hun.
definitely ask his opinion, but don't like hire him as a subcontractor.
Because, oh, no.
Johnny, how come this tea kettle has no handle? The handle upsets the aesthetics. Well, now I have to wear oven mist to pick it up. Why would you take it off the stove when it's so pretty sitting there? Okay.
It's such an exciting article to read, too, because he is an artist. And he does the guy has a, like Jobs did, a very clear, strong vision and doesn't let stuff get in the way. I just think it's a really, really a great article. And
the interesting thing about that article is that you can clearly see that Apple previously had Steve Jobs collaborating with Tim Cook on manufacturing and with Johnny Ive on design.
Right.
And now Steve Jobs isn't there anymore. So Johnny Ive has had to assume more of the design mantle, and Tim Cook's had to assume he had all the operational mantle, but he's got to do all the the CEO sort of jobs too. So now you have, instead of like the three people sitting on top, you've had them had to divide those tasks amongst the two of them.
Yeah.
Busy people.
Well, I can't wait to see that car.
I can't wait to buy it.
It's in the New Yorker magazine for this week, for the February 23rd issue. But thank you, New Yorker, for putting the entire article available for free online.
Yeah.
Now, if the car comes out, we all have to bet, I think, on a year. It could be never, or it could be a certain day.
Hmm.
A certain year.
Hmm.
I'll go for 2019.
I go for 2018.
I bet a dollar.
I'll go for never, and Andy recuses himself.
I abstain. I abstain. So
it's just between. Okay, Renee,
that's right. Abstains, not recuses. Different implications.
Courteously.
In absentia, Andy and Hondo said.
A little joke for you musical theater fans out there. None of them on the panel today, apparently. Okay.
If you made a Spider-Man joke, I'd get it, Andy.
Okay. Let's see. Apple Watch.
With great power comes great responsibility, even as a journalist.
Apple Watch will not have as many health sensors as Apple had hoped. This is another one of those Apple-approved articles. How about that?
I don't know if it's an Apple-approved article. I mean, I don't know if Apple's going to put out a story saying they're going to have less than what they want.
Yeah, maybe. Although it might be a good time for them to. What is this? What is this we got?
Lower expectations.
Oh, that's a cool watch. Here's the new Apple Watch. We've just got the prototype of this beautiful watch. You can wear that on the wrist. It's got a. There you go. And but the best part is when you flip the, you can light your cigarettes right from.
Is that the Urbane, Leo? Is that the brand new Urbane?
I found it on Watchville, so just I'm figuring that's a daily giz whiz.
That would have been really tempting when I was lighting my pilots, except it would have required to put my hand into a gas stove. Well, that would have been a smart idea.
Let me just light my cigarette with my watch.
I would use that to stay warm right now.
it's just as important the features you say no to as the features you say yes to.
Well, that's one of the things that I think, you know, it doesn't get discussed enough is that if Apple says 1,000 no's for every yes, that means there's got to be a bunch of stuff that they just experiment with and don't put out. And eventually that stuff will leak as well.
Yeah, I've had friends at Apple that have talked about the number of things that are just insanely cool that Apple developed that never made it out the door.
Right.
And they can't talk about them, of course. They're like, oh, I can't say anything about it. It was just amazing. You could not believe what I just saw there.
Andy's point about timing is well taken, because there were a bunch of Apple leaks in the Wall Street Journal, which I think we pretty clearly know is where app is the go-to place, even without Walt Marsberg, for Apple to leak stuff. For instance, this article, Apple orders more than 5 million watches for the initial run. This came out today.
See, you can tell that's not a leak because the analyst went after the writer on Twitter about it.
Oh, okay.
Well, they were like, they're all trying to guess based on whether it's this run, whether it's a run for the two quarters. And I was watching Ben Beharin and the author discuss it on Twitter, and they were saying it was just, it really is hard to tell, and they're all just guessing based on the information they can glean from supply chains.
Do you think it's a ballpark accurate figure?
It's hard to tell because that could be one that he could have heard from one factory, but maybe there's more than one factory. Maybe that's an order for two quarters or an order for one quarter. Or
the article said Quanta Computer is the sole assembler of the Apple Watch, and they started mass production earlier this year, which must be last month because this is February. To get ready for the April launch, thousands of Chinese workers will continue to work round the clock during the Chinese New Year's holidays at Quanta's factory in Changshu, China. Of course, Apple is not commenting. But if they do 5.5 million, where does that sit in the scale of things? Is that a bold, aggressive number to make?
I think that's conservative. Because another interesting statistic, I think it might have even been Bajaran who pointed this out last week. On the Android apps, I don't think Android has ever announced how many Android Wear devices have been sold, but you can tell you need to have the companion app and you have to download it from the Android, from the Google Play Store, and that has had fewer than 1 million downloads so far. I think it just
720,000, according to Canalis.
Yeah, which doesn't mean that this product is a failure, but it means that it's certainly of finding limited appeal. I really do think that I would be shocked if the Apple Watch didn't sell six times what Android Wear would sell on in any given circumstance. Because and the other thing that's on my mind is that the more I wear these Android Wear devices, the more I realize that they're actually pretty cool just as wristwatches. So I feel I'm more optimistic now than I might have been a few months ago, trying to guess, well, who's going to buy these in the first round. I think people are going to buy them just because it's not a hugely expensive, cool wristwatch, but it is definitely a cool wristwatch to put on your wrist with all these different designs out there. So, yeah, I don't know if that number that they've quoted is accurate, but that doesn't seem out of line to me at all.
How important is the band to this, you know, fashion thing? I mean, the fact that I can get a beautiful band on it, to me, makes it more desirable.
And change it
makes it more desirable, right?
Yeah, I think it fundamentally allows people to really customize it in a way that you don't want to customize the head because it's too hard to manufacture, but the bands are easy to manufacture and easy to customize. And I think people are going to have a lot of fun with them. I think we're going to see everything from the tread that we saw from Leatherman to the canvas to, you know, very, very high quality metals. You know, so I think people really have a different kind of watch because of that.
Yeah, I think it's also
a
really big
point. Cost a fortune.
Sorry,
I'm sorry. I also think it's a really big point that, like, on this watch, the band attaches like any other wristwatch. So you really need a special tool or take it to a jeweler to have it done. With this one, you can just spontaneously come home from work, change from your sports band to a dressy band, and then go back out again. So I really think that's a big point. I mean, one of the major questions we've all been asking is that, are people going to be satisfied with a very square, rounded, high-tech looking watch? Are they going to be satisfied with it as a fashion accessory? But if they have the ability to, at a whim, switch this out for a leather band, switch it out for a serpentine band, switch it out for anything that they want, that certainly addresses that problem.
It was interesting that they, in that same Johnny Ive article, they said that the shape was something that came along very quickly to them, and, you know, big surprise, a rounded rectangle from Apple. But, you know, they wanted to make it fashionable, and they went in the direction of the bands. And you can imagine that maybe one day there'll be a gold band that costs more than most of the other watches cost.
Right.
But it'll give people a lot of options. There are people who literally buy, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $35,000 watches annually. So it's the high end watch market is.
But that's not going to make this a hit. They can't make a hit off of 250,000 millionaires buying watches. They got to make a hit off of people buying a brand new iPhone when their contract is up, and then in the skip year in which they're still under contract, this is the year that, well, I've got $350, I'm going to buy a new Apple Watch. And then the next year, the contract is up, so they buy a new phone. And then after a year after that, well, my watch is starting to look a little bit ratty, I think I'll buy a new Apple Watch.
Chat room or anybody, we got to get a watch expert, like somebody who's really up on the watch business, on to talk about this, I think. Because, for instance, I don't know what is a high-end $6,000 watch? How many units do they sell of those? Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands? This is a new market. This isn't a tech market. This is a very different market.
Well, I think the Wall Street Journal split out the numbers too, and they said roughly half of those are going to be the sport model, a third of those are going to be the stainless steel model, and a sixth of those are going to be the gold model, gold rose gold model.
So half, there's Apple. If a third and a sixth doesn't add up.
Maybe I'm doing the math wrong. It's a half, a third, and then whatever the remainder is.
Another third. No, a sixth, whatever it is. Okay. Maybe it does add up. I'll call Kevin Rose. He's become a watch guy. I'll ask him who he would recommend. There are watch blogs, really a lot of them. Kevin has an app called Watchville, which I subscribe to, and it's just. But the real point, and I think we've talked about this before, is that a watch is not a necessary item to the use of your smartphone. It's an adjunct. It's an add-on. It's very much optional.
So if we look ahead to the future, though, at a certain point in the past, a mobile phone wasn't necessary, and then eventually they became more capable and more important, and now for a lot of people, they're primary computing devices. And the watch might never be anything, but it could also be something that eventually becomes capable enough that we leave our phone at home, and we have a little earpiece, and we have the watch on our wrist, and that becomes what we use as our primary computing device because it can project into our car and onto our fridge and into our TV, and it's small enough. It's powerful. It's just small. So I think Apple's it's good that these companies are positioning themselves for that kind of technology.
I think it's a little bit different in that once you have a smartwatch on your wrist that's designed really well, you appreciate that this doesn't have to be a smaller version of a phone. This really can be its own classic computing device. That's why I'm very interested in the software that iOS developers come up with to use this as an adjunct to these phones. It really does look as though the more I look at the developer resources for the Apple Watch, the more I see that it's a much bigger canvas, even now in its limited state, than Android Wear is. I'm a big fan of Android Wear. I recommend them to people who already have Android phones. But it seems as though there was a very deliberate choice that, look, this is not going to be a device that's going to be your primary computing device. Even in the 2 hours that you leave your phone at home, this is designed to be a way to enhance the phone experience. So it's going to be really interesting to see the class of devices that come out for this. It's not going to be people who are going to be convinced that I need a watch. It's going to be someone who has a spouse or a kid or a coworker who has one of these watches, and then they suddenly realize that, hey, why did you just have to walk up to your car and open it? Well, because my watch does that. Oh, how come you didn't have to take out? Oh, because my watch does that for me. And that's when you start thinking, you know what? I've got $350, and I'm going to make another $350 pretty soon. Why don't I just spend $350 on a watch?
Yep.
All right. We'll see. We'll find out soon. If 5 million, 5.5 million is enough to avoid lines, or if there's a, you know, prediction.
Constrained.
Is it constrained? Yeah.
Constrained.
It's constrained?
Constrained. Yeah.
All three of you agree. Constrained.
I think they want to make sure that they got watches for people who want to come in and buy watches, because they need to have that huge number in the first weekend that they put into a press release.
Right.
But then they're trying to find that sweet spot between, at some point you have to we need somebody to start a website telling them where there's a watch available for purchase somewhere, because that definitely enhances what they're trying to accomplish with that watch.
And if you look at, I think the rate last year was 700 and did they say 720,000 Android wearables
since launch
that were sold.
720, yeah, since launch.
Since launch, you know. So if Apple, let's just say Apple comes out of the gate at 500,000 or a million in the first week, you know, it's going to be a crushing blow to a lot of people who have been trying to get ahead of them. You know, I think that's the thing that, I think they have a pretty good chance of doing that.
I don't see the thing is that Apple has the biggest advantage above everything else that Apple has over Android Wear is that almost every phone that's in hands right now is capable. So many phones that are iPhones are in hands right now are going to be able to use an Apple Watch, whereas Android has never been. Everybody gets the latest operating system at the same time. You need a modern version of Android in order to make it work, and a lot of people are still happy and content to have older phones, or they're stuck with these phones that have not been updated by their carriers yet. So I don't know to what extent that interferes with our ability to sense how big a success or failure Android Wear is, but it definitely says this is just another example of Apple putting together an entire system of hardware so that whenever they want to execute something, they can just do that instantaneously, because everybody's running on common common reference platform hardware. Everybody's running almost the exact same operating system, so they can just deploy, and that will not be a barrier in any way, shape, or form.
Here's some numbers.
It actually helps Android Wear.
It might.
I hope it.
It might.
Yeah, because it only works with iPhones. So if you don't have an iPhone and suddenly you see your friends getting watches, you're gonna go. You might want to go buy a watch.
You know what's really interesting is that Android Wear watches are all the same. It says styling and design is the only difference in Android Wear. And we're starting to see some interesting styling and design.
Yeah. That's an interesting point, too. What if you just look at the Apple Watch, you're saying, reminds me of the Casio that I stopped wearing in high school in 1988. That's the only design that they have available. Whereas every 2 or 3 months, there's another interesting Android Wear design, whether it's square or round or rounded corners or something like that. It's just an interesting broad topic with so many different facets to it.
Here are some numbers, thanks to iPad 77703 in the chat room. This is from watchseek.com, their forums. Somebody's put together annual production numbers from 2010. The biggest is Tissot, 2 million a year. This puts 5.5 million in some perspective. Rolex sells a million a year. Omega, 700,000 a year. Tag Heuer, 700,000. Longines, 500,000. And then it goes down from there. Cartier, about 100,000. Piaget, 20,000. Glashütte, less than 10,000. A-Long, which I love, those beautiful A-Long S watches. They only sell about 2,000 of those a year. Of course, when they cost $100,000 each, that's still a good piece of change.
Do you compare it with that, or do you compare it with iPod sales? Like, what was an iPod Shuffle or iPod Nano selling?
But from the point of view of a watchmaker, $5.5 million for day one is a large number.
Yes.
Also, Omega would be doing very well if they were the only manufacturer of timepieces anywhere.
Right.
And that's the
position. There's a lot more competition. Yeah. Right. Yeah, if you add this all up, it's more than five and a half. Well, maybe it's not.
Also, it doesn't include like Casio. It doesn't. They're also
competing. No, these are the high-end watch makers.
People who just want to watch, they have the ability to buy a Swatch. Right. They have the ability to buy a Casio. It's interesting data point. I wasn't familiar with those kind of numbers, but I think it's hard for us to imagine this selling in wristwatch numbers as opposed to Apple device numbers. And Apple device numbers, even the failures are staggering. So I think that's a good number. Those 5 or 6 million.
I think the high end watches were if you do the math, it works out to 800,000 of the gold watches, which is not that dissimilar from what the higher end watches are selling.
Swatch Group is publicly held, so we can in fact look at their results. The results last year: gross sales of $9.7 billion. So I think that's more than a few hundred watches. I know I'm trying to find the number of watches. I don't know if they've published that, but. Yeah, you're talking millions, millions and millions of watches easily. Because a Swatch is like $30. Actually, Swatch is a bunch of brands, some of which are expensive. Let's take a break. Come back with more. We'll talk about apps and some great games with no in-app purchases coming up as we continue with Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Alex Lindsay from Pittsburgh in the snow.
All behind me, right here.
From the planet
right
Hoth.
After this, I'm gonna dig a tunnel to get out.
Did you get as much snow in Pittsburgh as Andy got in Boston?
No, we just got cold. We got a little snow here and there. I mean, there's some slushy weather and so on and so forth. Or not slushy, but a lot, you know, 2 or 3 inches of snow, but nothing major. It was mostly that it got down into it got below zero Fahrenheit and stayed there for an extended period of time, which we're not used to. Down here, Renee is looking at me like, "Yeah, whatever." That was last week.
We haven't gotten any snow this week. Andy took the big, like he just like Kevin Costner in The Bodyguard. He jumped in front of it.
They've got so much snow they're dumping it in the bay.
You know, it really annoys me that the Iditarod they're having to change the route for lack of snow. Okay, New England is a better dog sledding course than the Yukon is right now. That's just being a jerk about
Did someone
this
put
weather.
Up a force field. I don't know what happened. We had dog sledding last weekend. They brought the dogs over to the park and they were doing dog sledding. And it was just
all
not
I know
enough
is
snow.
I'm contemplating getting a hotel room someplace warm like Delaware. It's
our show today brought to you. Actually, this would be good for you, Andy, by Blue Apron. You can why go shopping when you can have the food brought to you? You still get to cook it.
That guy risked his life to deliver me a case of canned beans.
Exactly.
That's power. I don't need to have a Bentley, chauffeur to Bentley. I just want to make someone deliver beans
well,
to me.
Let me ask you this. Does FedEx, does USPS, do you still get deliveries?
They are surprisingly really good about these deliveries. I have to. I can't shovel every single morning, but I have to keep everything out of courtesy. I have to keep everything nicely salted and sanded because.
So tomorrow there could be a blue. In fact, let's send him a Blue Apron box, so that you have it now. Now this is kind of superfluous.
Protein.
But
we need protein.
Yeah, protein. No, we'll give you protein. This is a little superfluous because these boxes are refrigerated. But I guess you know, in this case, they'll be keeping the stuff from freezing. Really a great idea. If you love to cook or you'd like to learn to cook, but you don't have time or the inclination to shop, Blue Apron does it for you. They send you, for less than $10 a meal, fresh ingredients, perfectly proportioned, even the salt and pepper you need, step-by-step recipe instructions, including beautifully printed pictures. You know exactly what you're doing. It's like a cooking class in a box. You'll be making and cooking healthy meals in half an hour. In your home, you'll love it without a single trip to the grocery store and no waste from unused ingredients. Really great for date night if you want to impress or for cooking with friends. They have family plans with kid-friendly ingredients so the whole family can eat well and have fun preparing meals together. Every balanced meal, about 500 to 700 calories a serving, so it's so yummy you'd never know. Half an hour cooking, shipping is free, menus are new. You'll never get the same meal twice. And what meals? Chinese five-spice beef stir-fry with noodles. Orange or barley jambalaya. Jambalaya it's Mardi Gras. It's Fat Tuesday today. We gotta go. Jambalaya. You go to blueapron.com/twit right now. Find out what's on the menu this week. Get your first two meals free. blueapron.com/twit. Oh, look at those crispy chicken thighs. Oh, those look so good. Delicious, healthy meals. And you know, I have to say, when you're doing it yourself, you may not make such a great dish. You might just make it. Yeah, I might just broil those chicken thighs in the oven. No, no. Let's make it something special tonight with Blue Apron. blueapron.com/twit. We could talk about Beats for a little bit. More rumors here. Well, this is a fact because he announced it. The very famous BBC Radio 1 DJ Zane Lowe is leaving his radio gig and going to Cupertino. His last show is March 5th. What will he be doing? Well,
DJing at Cafe Max.
I think it's not. In fact, DJing at Cafe Max, he probably, I would think, would be one of the curators of the new Beats music, right? Any rumors about when we're going to see that? Is it going to be iOS 8.2 that we'll see Beats?
8.4?
Four?
Maybe. 8.2 was the watch stuff. 8.3 is the iOS-y stuff. 8.4 is around.
So they're taking their time, huh?
Well, I mean, so they had a plan going with the iTunes Radio. iTunes Radio was going to go international, and then it went to America and Australia, and then it stopped. And what happened, you know, it's hard to imagine that Apple bought Beats, and suddenly all the plans they had for iTunes had to change because now they have these different services. So I think that's why last year we really didn't see much from iTunes. We didn't see any of the new TV or movie stuff. We didn't see any continuity stuff for media. We didn't really hear anything. I don't remember if Eddie Q took stage for anything other than iWork last year. And, you know, now they've had a year of working with all the Beats people, and they're starting to integrate it. And I mean, whether they get it done in time for now or WWDC or, you know, for the next iPhone release, it seems almost certain they're gonna push something out at this point.
We talked last week about the Clive Davis Grammy party, right? Did we talk about that?
No, I don't think we did.
Because it was Grammys were a week ago Sunday. Clive Davis hosts a very famous pre-Grammy party. Tim Cook was there. Eddie Q was there. Jimmy Iovine was there sitting next to Al Gore. Who is on the Apple board, I might add. Clive Davis, record legend, called Tim Cook a special human. That's very Jerry Lewis. This is a special, special man. Music executives lined up single file for an audience with the Apple contingent, not to mention selfies and overshares about their first Mac, according to Billboard magazine.
Cookies, Tim Cook selfies.
Tim Cook selfies are called cookies.
Yes.
I like that.
Well, because Timmy is taken.
At the Grammys, Eddie Q played the go-between, greeting music label executives and asking, have you already met with Jimmy? So I think there's a little deal-making going on here. Yeah. clearly the labels are interested because the labels want to make more.
Never mind the artists. Well,
Screw the artists.
Labels want to make more.
In the great tradition of the music industry, screw the artists.
I think Iovine also, what he brings also is a little bit of insider, you know, grit to it that, right. You know, Apple may have a hard time from the outside, but he can say, as someone who's already created a record company, is that I can do that again. Like, you don't want me, right. What you want to do is you want to set up a deal with us with Beats. You don't want Apple to decide right. That it has to go into the music industry, because if we go into the music industry, none of you will be left.
Oh, I don't think he's threatening them.
I bet you it may not be that clear, but I bet you people are already talking about it.
Billboard says Iovine's been meeting face-to-face with senior execs from the major labels and indies about a, quote, all-you-can-eat music service with a modest subscription fee, end quote.
Yeah, which is what they've all complained about. I mean, that's what they're...
The same way they're... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Andy.
I feel like they're revamping music the same way they're planning to revamp photos. Where it's not just we're going to come up with a new app. No, we're going to have the new cloud services. No, we are tearing everything down to bedrock and rebuilding it in a way that makes more sense for us in 2015. And I bet that it looks like this sort of deal making is part of that too.
Philip Elmer DeWitt, who wrote this story for Fortune and was on Twit on Sunday, this is his beat. He said, he's actually quoting Apple Insider's Neil Hughes. He said that one of the things Apple's doing to make Beats stand out, you know, really the problem Beats had coming out of the box was it wasn't different enough from Spotify, RDO, and all the other services that people were already subscribing to get people to jump. They only, before Apple bought them, had it's estimated around 110,000 subscribers. But what they're focusing on now, according to Philip, is exclusivity. A limited window of exclusivity for major new albums. Let's say Taylor Swift's 1989. We'll have it on Beats. For the first month, if you want to listen, you're going to have Beats. That's the kind of thing I agree that they're going to have to do if they want to get people to subscribe to Beats. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a couple of bucks, even if it's $7 instead of $10, I don't know if that's enough to get people to subscribe to Beats.
Well, I think if there were big payoffs in those areas to do that, and Apple can afford to do that, you might see a Taylor Swift is a perfect example of someone who already pulled all of her stuff off of these
right.
networks, making a deal with Apple. Like, that would be a big piece for Apple is that, you know, that for a limited amount of time or whatever, that those or all of her stuff is going to be put onto that service. And the danger for other networks is Apple has the money to do some pretty get very aggressive about that. And you don't need to pull very many headliners away before Spotify right. is not very valuable. I mean, everyone talks about the long tail, but no one wants only the long tail.
Well, and that's what Billboard says. Apple's goal is not to merely compete with Pandora, Spotify, an unnamed industry insider told Billboard. It is to be the music industry.
There's a headline.
They already have it. Yeah, they already have 75% with iTunes of music sales.
Yeah, that's the subhead to all the news last week, the week before about Apple having such a profitable quarter and now being the first $750 billion company. That it's not just money that to fill up the money crib so they can, you know, drive in like Scrooge McDuck. It represents firepower. It means that if they want a business, they can own it, and they can, instead of develop it, other companies have to cultivate something for 5 or 6 years. Apple is capable of saying, hey, great job cultivating this guy for 5 or 6 years. We're going to quadruple his salary and give him the sexiest job in the world. Good luck holding on to him at those rates. So it's the only thing that kind of gets me very curious about this sort of news is that I don't know if dealing with music this way is a great next 2 or 3 or 5 years solution. It's not a great next 10 years or 20 years solution, because I'm very certain that the dream of the kid who has a garage band right now, 12, 13, 14 years old, mastering the same 2.5 chords, is not to get a record deal with a major company. It's to develop their own fan base and have a really have a lot of hits on YouTube and have a really good Bandcamp presence. So the question is, what are they doing to make sure that that kid is going to want to do business with Apple and make them the distributors of their music and connect them to their fans? Those kids aren't being invited to the Grammys. So they would still like to get a selfie with Tim Cook, but they're not getting invited.
One thing also, it'll be interesting to see how far they take the curation process. So they've hired a very popular DJ. They'll probably bring in other folks to do it. And that's a top-down approach. But I think that there's still a lot of opportunity for them to spread that out a bit and make sure that tastemakers are actually making money as well. If they figured out a way to do that, that would energize that market a lot. People making literally making money because lots of people are listening to their mixtapes, which people can just download
nowadays?
Over.
I maybe don't understand the music industry anymore, but certainly that was the role radio played. And you had big name DJs, the Rodney Bigenheimers of the world, who were tastemakers. But it seems like so much of a more of a fragmented business now. And doesn't it seem like people listen to their friends? Certainly don't listen to radio. This is your area of expertise, Alex. You were a music director for years.
I think the issue is that they listen to their friends because they don't really listen to radio anymore.
Right.
And so, but I think that a lot of the time when you look at like what Pandora hands you, it's generally crap. You know, I don't know. I agree.
I don't think Pandora is a good music discovery service.
Right. So, but I think that there are people who are innately good at seeing that. And if you pick them and say, I really want to follow what that person's doing, it may not be, I don't think it necessarily needs to be a big name, but I think that finding a way that you can have those kinds of people doing what they do best, which is pick music. And there's just, I had friends that did that. I mean, I was okay at it doing it for radio station.
Didn't Twitter try to capitalize on this with a
hashtag music?
Well, yeah, and it was a big failure.
Well, I think the problem is that no one's monetizing it. So the thing is that
there's no incentive to do it.
You know, so the thing is that if people started making money on it, then they would, you know, and they could start. Big stars would release more of their own playlists and those
fees,
radio
Alex.
Stars would.
Ooh, sorry? Affiliate fees, yeah.
Affiliate revenue for anyone who buys songs off.
Yeah, make a mixtape. They could do. Apple could easily do.
Absolutely, but that type of business model where the people who are making those mixes and building up followers because people like what they, you know, I think some of us are old enough to remember, you know, Rock Over London and we used to listen to that every, I mean, I used to listen to it every Sunday to find out.
There are podcasts right now that recommend music.
And those podcasts can't play the music.
Right.
You know, so part of this is tying the technology together because you have this technology where everyone can listen to the music for free. And then you have people who want to talk about it. And the key is how do we make, for instance, maybe a playlist where I can talk about some of the stuff in between, or I can tell you what that is. And I'm making some money on the fact that you're listening to it through my playlist, but I can also play the music. Right now, the podcasts that talk about music can't play the music,
right?
Because that would be, you know, against copyright. It's stupid.
So a couple of data points here. Nobody over 30 cares about music discovery. They already decided what they're going to listen to for the rest of their lives.
I don't think so.
AC/DC.
I think that's the vast majority. Maybe there are a few people like you guys who are always looking for new music. But I think the vast majority of people over 30 already know what they like, and that's it.
Well, maybe that's an opportunity, though. I don't think it's so much that we're not interested in new music. It's that we are no longer in social groups. We're no longer going to clubs. We're no longer listening to the radio even. We still have the same desire for new things, but now it's just our normal outlets have been expired. But if you give us a new, but we have jobs and we have money. And so if you give us a new way of exploring and discovering music, like I bought so many, there's so many tracks that I buy off of the day after the AMAs or the Grammy Awards,
right?
Because this is the first time I've heard this song. It's for an audience that is easily 20 years younger than me,
right?
But man, I've not been able to get that song out of my head, and boom, I buy it immediately.
All right. We'll say it's arguably. I think it's still the vast majority of people over 30 aren't looking for music discovery.
But
the people under 30 who are looking for music discovery, where do they go? They go to their friends, right?
Well,
I mean, I look at my son, and he's sitting there with his friends. They get most of their music from YouTube, of all places. And then they kind of vote on what to listen to next.
I guess I would argue that's because the system by which we learn this stuff is so inefficient. That's the most efficient way to do it, which is not a very good way to do it necessarily. I mean, it's reasonable because you learn from your friends. I mean, I learned a lot of the music that I listened to because, I mean, the only reason I knew XTC was because my cousin listened to it.
Friends and family.
But I think that finding more efficient ways to do that and more efficient ways to find that music is something that people would do if they could do it well. It's just that no one's doing it very well. I think that is that's the real issue. We don't want to listen to radio. We don't want to listen to Pandora's fine. I mean, my brother listens to Pandora all day. I mean, some people find that the discovery, they're willing to sit through a lot of crap to get to the songs that are new and interesting. But I think that there's a lot of ways that I think we can improve that. And part of that is having people making money who are the tastemakers. And I think that's across video, across audio, across music. We're, you know, when we take radio out of this, when we take broadcast TV out of it on finding some of these things, but especially radio, you got right now there's a vacuum. There's no way to find that because we're not listening to radio anymore. And so how do you, and filling that vacuum, you know, eventually is going to cost money to do that. And it may just be a shave of what people are already bringing back to the artist or the label or the company. But until we do that, we won't see a huge explosion in that area.
So you all agree there's a green field for Apple here in music discovery.
So many green fields. It's a little time.
That's my favorite song, Green Sleeves. That was a great song.
So easy to play on the recorder.
I have to admit, though, and I'm just getting old. And by the way, there's about 1,000 people in the chat room who said, no, Leo, you're wrong. I'm over 50 and I'm still discovering new music. But I listen to the Grammys. And
have you heard of this young lads called Bon Jovi?
Bon Jovi.
That can't possibly be right, but it's something Bon Jovi. Phonetically.
Isn't it Bono Jovi? He's got it.
Yeah. And I listen to the new music and I go, what's wrong with you kids? That's not music.
That's noise.
That's noise.
Blows in the hand, the music. Don't get me started.
A couple of short stories real quick before we get to our picks of the week. Apple has banned bonded servitude at supplier factories worldwide.
Good for you.
Good for you, Apple. Isn't that special? It's actually hard for Apple to control the employment practices at supplier factories. And we saw that horrific article about recruiters getting people from small villages. And they owe so much money to the recruiters that they can't quit. And it's just, it's just a nightmare. And that's not usually at the factories making the iPhones. It's the factory making the parts for the iPhones. Yeah. But Apple says no more. And they made some rules about the company pays the recruitment bonus, not the people, so forth. Apple's building an $848 million solar farm in Monterey. This is actually Google's doing the same thing. All of these big companies now basically want to be carbon neutral. Apple will get electricity from the farm at a fixed rate for 25 years. The power they're getting from the farm, according to Tim Cook, is enough to power Apple's new campus, its existing California offices, and all of its California retail stores. Generally, the way this stuff works is it's not the actual power from the farm. They get credits, which they then apply. But I don't know how this is going to work.
He had a busy week, Leo. He was at Goldman Sachs, and then he was at the White House Summit on cybersecurity.
We could talk about that, too. So, yeah, that statement on the solar thing was from Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. Tim Cook challenges Obama with an impassioned stand on privacy. Just watch.
People have entrusted us with their most personal and precious information. We owe them nothing less than the best protections that we can possibly provide. By harnessing the technology at our disposal and working together as businesses, governments, and citizens, we believe we can bring about a future that fully embraces both privacy and security. We must get this right. History has shown us that sacrificing our right to privacy can have dire consequences. We still live in a world where all people are not treated equally. Too many people do not feel free to practice their religion or express their opinion or love who they choose.
You can say that twice.
A world in which that information
he did it repeat himself there.
Can make the difference between life and death.
I'm going to interrupt. God, that's a long minute and a half. Is it his cadence that makes it feel like it was 4 minutes?
It's a southern charm, Leo.
It's his gravitas that makes him sound that.
There's another 45 seconds, but I'm sure it's pretty much more of the same. It's interesting to hear him. Nobody's saying this in the U.S. government. Kind of call for privacy and security for other people outside the United States. It's pretty much accepted that only people in America should have privacy and security, and that the NSA could spy on anybody it wants outside our shores.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
You say that as a Canadian. Yep.
Well, no, yep. It's just too bad that that sort of stuff is necessary. And it's not just altruism that's powering those sort of statements. The government is really putting a lot of pressure on every device manufacturer and every software manufacturer to say that, look, if we need access to people we're interested in through a device that you made, you're going to give us access to that device. And some of these programs are just incredibly aggressive about it. Not just simply we'll file paperwork. It's like, no, you have an absolute responsibility to be our conduit to people that we're interested in. And they're even companies as big as Apple are finding themselves facing a possibility where they can't fight this sort of stuff. So they really have to make sure that they have the support of the public behind them.
You're not going to get the support of the government. Obama, in talking to Kara Swisher at Recode, reiterated his desire to have encryption and said we should all have encryption. But that's speaking out of one side of his mouth, because at the same time as the United States is paying lip service to privacy and encryption, they're pushing harder and harder for private companies to cooperate. As we just learned, they're doing black hat operations all over the world, spying on everybody they can, intercepting Cisco routers in the mail to corrupt them.
The NSA developing new, intercepting firmware for hard drive controllers, yep, so that they can write malware that actually lives inside the controller itself. And mm-hmm. That's
incredible. Yeah.
Well, and that's
so. At the same time as the spokespeople for the U.S. government, including the president, are paying lip service to privacy and security. What Tim Cook is really saying is, we got to do this, and it ain't going to come from the U.S. government. They're not doing it.
He said it was life and death,
and he's saying it's life and death, not just for U.S. citizens, but for the world. I think that there's a clash here coming. I respect what Tim's saying. I think he's right, but do you think he's going to be able to do it?
Well, I think that he doesn't have to. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm happy that the CEO of the richest and one of the most powerful companies in the world is deciding to litigate this matter.
I agree.
Well, and I think that one of the things that's interesting is that he doesn't have to, in some ways, he doesn't have to win. What Apple's doing and what Google's doing and a lot of Microsoft's doing is they're basically, rather than saying you can, you know, there's a back door that we'll give you, they're cutting off all the cords. You know, they're saying we're cutting away our ability to go do that. It doesn't matter whether you give us a court order or not. We have no access to those keys. You know, so they're really jettisoning the ability to do it, not just so that they can't be compelled. What that leaves the government with is the government has to now pass laws. They have to pass regulations that are going to compel Apple to put those keys back in. And that is a much harder road for the government. And so the government doesn't want Apple to keep on cutting these, because they know that, you know, if they looked at the SOPA debate, if they look at these things, that they're not going to get that passed. You know, that's the issue is that they're going to, unless that they will get it passed if there's a huge terrorist act in the United States. But barring another 9/11, they are not going to get even interest by the American public, and they'll have enough people rise up against any kind of legislation. And so what they're upset about is that they were able to quietly do this before. Apple and Google and Microsoft got smart and now are cutting all the cords so that they can't even get into the back end. And that makes it a very, very uphill battle for the government to get back in.
Maybe I'm a cynic. I just feel like Apple, Microsoft, Google, Facebook are going to say anything they can to reassure their customers that they're protecting their privacy, but that behind the scenes they either can or won't do that. I don't
agree with that.
You think they really?
I think they're doing it now.
Especially Apple, because Apple is they're not struggling in any way, but they need to make sure that they can maintain their ability to do exactly what they want to do and maintain a difference between owning an iPhone and owning other devices. And with a great deal of credibility, they say that, look, we are the company that's not collecting data on you. We don't care what you do with our phones so long as you pay us for them. And so if they lose the ability to control the destiny of their own hardware, they lose a big, big advantage, not only in business terms, but in their own desire to make the products they want to make. So I also believe that Google is sincere about that, and I believe that Microsoft is sincere about that. But Apple is the one company that I would not ever consider would say that sort of thing publicly and then behind the scenes saying, no, whatever you guys want to do. If you want to find out if you want to get sexy pics of the Kardashians off their phone, we're going to help you do that, TMZ.
Well, and Apple has a, they have a, it, as Andy said, it's one of the things that differentiates them. You know, Google makes money on, and Facebook makes money on looking at what people are doing. Apple doesn't make money on that right now. And I think that the advantage there is they say, well, we don't have a dog in this, you know, in this show. So we can push ultimate privacy if we want to. And I think they have more of a reason to do that. And it's cleaner. Because Google and Facebook, of course, want to track certain things about you that the government wants. So the government wants the information that they're tracking for advertising. The government may want it for other things to figure things out, where Apple can say, well, we're not interested in that. And we'll, you know, we're willing to close that all off to protect you. And that's a differentiation. There's a certain population that wants that.
I'm not sure I believe it. I know it's good for business.
We need cynics, though, Leo. The cynics keep us honest.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because they won't or they can't resist the U.S. government. But I feel that in public, all of these companies are going to be very public in their protestations that they are protecting our privacy. And behind the scenes, they're going to just do whatever they have to do. I don't think they even have a choice.
I think that, we're already seeing like canary clauses on websites. And they're happening more and more often where they're not allowed to tell somebody that they're complying with the government. But so long as they're not, they can put a clause saying, hey, we're not complying with the government. And then like if 4 months later, this clause has been removed, they have been able to tell their users, by the way, we are wired. Don't be careful what you're talking about without having to announce that sort of stuff. There really is a lot of pushback from companies. Pushback from companies so long as they're not telecommunications companies, because AT&T and Verizon and all these companies are perfectly happy to help, it appears. That's the weakest point.
Well, you know, there's two sides to this. And on the one side, I think that customers would be very perturbed if they found out mm-hmm. that Apple or Microsoft said, we're going to protect your privacy and didn't. On the other hand, the minute there's a terrorist attack on our shores and one company gets the blame for it, we would have known about this, but we couldn't decrypt the iMessages. That's bad, yeah, too.
They're already flying the pedophilia flag for that. I mean, like that's their go-to.
You're right. It's easier.
Yeah.
Yes, let's stay skeptical, but... I hope
trust but verify.
I feel like Tim Cook's telling the truth. I don't feel like he's lying. I'm not saying that, Andy, but okay. I'm just saying I think that's what every company wants it to be like. I don't know if it actually is that way. Apple has increased the maximum app size from 2 gigs to 4 gigs. Good news for your massive texture maps.
Devices that are strong enough to run it.
Yeah. Two-step authentication now is slowly creeping through the Apple world. Now FaceTime and iMessages. Good news. If you've turned on two-step, we'll require it. I think that's a good thing.
But that two-step is not biometric yet. Is that correct?
No. It's a token that gets sent to your phone either over Find My iPhone or over text.
I keep trying to turn it on. how do you turn it on? You go to your Apple ID page?
Yeah.
Iforgot.apple.com.
You can get there from that, yeah.
Even if you didn't forget, you can get there. And then you can turn on two. I feel like I was like waiting for an email saying, okay, you did.
If you make other changes at the same time, they make you wait a couple of days because they don't want somebody to hijack your account and then immediately go and lock you out of it.
That's what happened. I couldn't do it then because I had just changed something. Okay. So I probably could now. Go to My Apple ID and manage it. Change preferences as this would be it, right? Sign in, close your eyes while I sign into my iCloud account. And now where do we password and security?
Security, yeah.
Then you have to answer some questions, which I don't remember the answers to. All right.
And the two-factor gets rid of those questions, the two steps.
I know. That's the problem. Oh, you can reset it. I see here. Forgot your answers? Send a reset security info email to your address. All right. So do that, folks. Turn it on.
You could never have guessed when we were 8 or 9 years old that the name we chose for our dog was going to be so important late in life. We use the name of our first pet more often than we use geometry.
I just fill it with pseudo random gunk and store it in one password.
And then put it.
I
don't have to
exactly.
Worry
about someone. Yeah.
Your answers do not match your records. Try again. Apple's App Store says no to guns, but yes to weed. Thank you, TechCrunch, for that excellent headline.
Yeah, Jim Dalrymple posted that he called them and spoke to them, and they said they're not doing anything differently than they ever did before.
They've always done
the same thing. They didn't know what that story was about.
It's because it comes from a company called, or a social networking app called Mass Roots, that is an app for finding your nearby marijuana store. And it is legal now. They're using geolocation. It is in the App Store. It's back, but they're using geolocation to make sure that you live in one of 23 states where you can buy marijuana, with or without a medical marijuana card. Apple has paired with Pinterest to create a new app discovery pin. You can pin your apps. Apple is also promoting, and I celebrate them for this, great games with no in-app purchases. They call it pay once and play. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Long overdue.
Yep.
I wonder if that's going to be part of parental controls too. Like they only allow kids to download apps that are pay once, not without in-app purchases.
Oh my God. Michael comes to us every day trying to buy $50 worth of gems.
But that's great. It's getting parents and kids to talk.
No. but then he says, but I have a card I got for Christmas. I have my Apple iTunes gift card. What do you want me to spend it on? Sia chandelier?
Music discovery.
Music discovery. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, folks, gentlemen, your picks of the week. But first, a word from my pick for invoicing, FreshBooks.com. Love FreshBooks. Saved me a lot of time and money back when I was a freelancer, just doing it all by myself. I had to invoice my clients, and I hated it. Come the end of the month, I would just say, I'll do it next month. And then next month, and then next month. I've told the story before where I invoiced Rogers for the Canadian TV show, 5 invoices at a time, and they really did not like that. Then Amber told me about FreshBooks, and my life changed. It makes it so easy to send out those invoices. You create them. They look professional, nice. They come in email, but you can also send paper invoices if you want. The nice thing about the email, your clients get a big pay button. Which makes it very easy to get paid because it integrates with all the payment systems out there. And so your clients can even use credit cards to pay you. If they do forget to pay, you can avoid those awkward emails and phone calls with automated late payment reminders. That way you will get paid faster. In fact, on average of 5 days faster, according to FreshBooks. And here's another stat. FreshBooks customers double their revenue in the first 2 years. We did, come to think of it. If you're still using Word, Excel, or Google Docs to create invoices, if you're still printing them and mailing them, you want to take a look at FreshBooks. And now with their apps, too, Android or iOS, you can keep receipts, snap pictures. You can automatically track time and hours. It's never been easier to bill clients for your time. FreshBooks.com. Try it free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And if you do me a favor, when they ask, how did you hear about us, if you just say, oh, yeah, I heard about it on Mac Break Weekly. That would make me very happy. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week is an app called Records. Now, I have to preface this by saying that I don't use this personally, but it came out today. I did download it to try it out. I say I don't use it because I don't use databases on my Mac. And this is a database on your Mac, but it is for people who were using Bento previously. And ever since FileMaker wound down Bento, we've been asked, what's an alternative? What can we use instead of Bento? And usually you'd say something complicated like FileMaker, or you'd try a couple other things. But Records really seems to want to pick up where Bento left off. It's all template-based. It looks very easy to use. It's from pushpopcorn.com. And they have a couple demos up there. But you set things up. It looks really easy to maintain. You can set up the way you want to organize your information. And just if you really liked Bento and you've been holding on to it with your cold, dead hands at this point now, I would absolutely give Records a try. It looks really well done.
Nice. Yeah, I miss Bento.
For a lot of things, it's great. I used to work in databases, so I never want to see one again as long as I live. But a lot of people really like databases.
There you go. No SQL. That's his motto.
Yeah.
Records. And how much is it?
I don't have the price in front of me, but
Did you see that, Jason, when you looked in the App Store? Oh, well.
It is $49.99.
Oh, okay.
And it just changed to the Canadian price for me. That's
awesome. It's amazing how our expectations for the cost of software have really... been changed.
Well, the thing is, it goes back to that same discussion about the free-to-play apps, is that if there's no way to make money, if you don't pay developers, you're not going to get version two, and you're not going to get the next great app. So whenever there's someone who makes a great app, whether I use it a lot or not, I like their talent, I consider it an investment. I want to give them the money that they can use, hopefully, to support that app and to make the next great app.
Yeah. Yeah, $50 though. I feel like everything should be $1 now.
You won't get this app for $1.
No, you can't.
The choice is not having the app. Yeah.
Keyboard input is a $12 in-app purchase.
Yeah, that would be worse. You're right. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I have a protest pick.
Yes.
I got a... get.
What the hell? A Surface Pro? Are you insane?
So I got the Surface Pro.
What do you think?
And I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Yeah. So, I felt like, I'm just frustrated. I wanted to see, can you actually do it well? Touching, with a touchscreen and keyboard and everything else. And I love it. I'm hoping that Apple someday will move down that path. But until they do, I pretty much for the next couple of weeks, just as an experiment, I took my iPad out, put it somewhere else and put this in as a replacement. And so I'm going to use this for a while. It was more expensive than my iPad. So, of course, I got i7 and, all that other stuff. So it's but so far, I put Photoshop on it, runs great. I put some the day-to-day stuff that I want to be able to do is just very quickly open something and draw on it and send it back to somebody. And being able to do that.
You're making a Windows machine your pick of the week.
This is going to be blogged everywhere, Alex.
What? I'm going to be what?
It's going to be blogged everywhere.
All I can say is don't call me a fanboy. I'm out there. They're behind. I think the reason that I'm picking this is that I think Apple is grossly behind in touchscreen on their laptops, and someone who has a lot of them, and I'm bitter. I'm getting bitter about it.
Windows 8.1 does really celebrate touch.
Yeah.
Similarly, this is the Dell XPS 13, which is a 13-inch. Windows notebook in a laptop, 2.5-pound laptop the size of an 11-inch MacBook Air. Yeah. This is what I can't wait for. When Apple releases a MacBook Air with this form factor and a fifth generation Intel chip, that's going to be a product.
Yeah,
but you have to run the only issue with that and this is you have to run Windows. Sucks.
So, it's a little funky. It has this kind of funky experience, I will say.
It's you're horrible. Just kind
of Windows.
Are we talking about Prince and the New Revolution funky, or are we talking about gym socks you left in the trunk of your car funky?
Gym socks funky.
Let's just be really clear here.
I'm just saying it's just like...
George Clinton, that's goofy. A good kind of funk.
Windy... There's things that Windows does that as a Mac user, you're just like, really?
I also have to point out that when you do a touchscreen laptop or tablet... You probably can't see it, but there's fingerprints all over my laptop screen. Which
I have kids.
An iPad.
It's kind of
I have kids. They're all over everything.
Yeah, so it's like my iPad. I guess we're getting used to that, aren't we?
It's when you put the pizza slice down and then just touch the screen immediately.
Oof.
That's
the
problem.
But look at that bezel. I mean, the bezel-less screen is amazing, right? Look at that.
Yeah, and they didn't cheapen out and say, well, we'll make this a smaller sized keyboard because we want to hide the bezel.
Yeah,
it's. I'm with Alex. I got to use a Surface 3 for a few months while I was reviewing it, and it's not enough to make me switch from Mac to Windows, but it's enough to make me think that, oh man, if this run Mac OS, I wouldn't even consider buying an Air.
I agree.
I wouldn't buy an iPad. I would buy this, and this would do both jobs. And I think about what it's like to be a Windows user and say, well, fine, keep your iPad. I have something that's a good desktop. It's a good notebook. It's a good tablet. Excuse me. It's not a good tablet because the touch apps aren't there yet. But again, assuming that Microsoft delivers on Windows 10.
Well, this is another one of those. I agree with you. And I think the Surface Pro 3 actually really is very good hardware. Although, come on, that kickstand, that's dopey.
Here's the worst part is I'm so used to like Apple stuff that I put the keyboard on and then it kept on falling over. I was like, what am I supposed to do here? I don't understand. And
kickstand.
I was like, how does this? And then I was like, and then it took me like a second. And then I was like, oh, there's a kickstand on the back. I don't actually mind it. I kind of like the fact that it's built in and then it just disappears because the thickness doesn't bother me at all. And I like that I don't have to get something else to get it to sit up. So I'm on a flight, and with an iPad, I have to figure out what I'm gonna some stand that I'm gonna use. With this, I just pop it open and keep on watching. And as I said, there's a handful of PC apps that I've been, you know, kind of popping over on the Mac to go use, you know, and this will be easier. So,
well,
so
anyway, you missed out because you could have gotten a $59 Windows tablet. This is the WinBook. I'm going to review this before you buy later.
I just want you to review Photoshop on that.
You wouldn't want to run Photoshop on it. And it is only 7 inches. It's, you know, it's smaller than a mini, but
it really is only for Adobe Premiere effects.
Right.
But if you're using Microsoft Word or just browsing a lot, I mean, $59 for a Windows computer.
If you're watching videos, awesome.
Yeah, $59. That's like the tax on a MacBook Pro.
Mm. Right.
No, it's less than the tax. It's half the tax.
I want to move to wherever you're getting taxed.
Yeah, really? That's okay. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week. Is it a Windows device? If it is, you're in, we're just really good. This show, we're just
but it does tie in nicely to that previous recommendation, to the courtesy of Cramcan 3000, the future of video podcasting. It is yet another portable mobile keyboard. This is Zag's pocket keyboard that got showed off at, I think if they showed off at CES a couple months ago, just started pre-orders. Uh-huh. It's a really, really cool design because, okay, so here's your keyboards. As usual for a mobile keyboard, it's smaller than the normal size because it almost has to be like no wider than an iPad. Even so, it's a little bit narrower than that. The keys themselves, they work great. They're a little bit shallower throw than other even folding keyboards that I've used, but it's still quite comfortable to use. The thing they got really right is that you have a full width space bar that with no breaks in it. So it's, you do have to type a little bit more slowly, but it's very, very typable. But the big win is that, yes, it does have a built-in tablet stand, but it folds like this. And there it is.
Wow.
Ooh.
So now you have something that you can, it's...
You could actually hide that in a body cavity.
I'd like to see that video on before you buy it.
Okay, like maybe not.
But the idea is that this will fit easily inside a jacket pocket. It doesn't disappear inside a pants pocket as well as some of the other folding keyboards I've tried, the kinds that fold this way. But that is the big win of folding it this way is that you don't wind up with. Oh, but and the other thing, it automatically turns on as soon as you unfold it, which is really
so
really
do
cool
I.
design.
That's good. Yeah.
Hey there.
Hey.
You go. But the real big win of this is that there's no you get continuous keyboard from left to right. There's no break in the middle that you have to sort of deal with. It's not expensive either. It's about $69, and it's also multi-platform, so you can use it on your iPad, you can use it on your iPhone, you can use it on Android devices. And people think that you're one of them really impressive people who either has a diamond bracelet or a slide rule. So that's the other advantage of going this way. So I've been using it for about a week now. This definitely would be one of my two favorites because of this really interesting design. And so there it is.
I keep buying the little doodads that Andy recommends every week.
It's great because once it's both from readers and readers and listeners and like PR people, once they realize that you have an interest in a certain product category, these products tend to find you.
Yeah.
So I still have like a couple of, I actually have a drawer in my filing cabinet full of like folding mobile keyboards, some of which I decided, okay, nice try. Thank you for the sample, but I don't think I need to cover this. And I was like, wow, I'm sorry that I've spent $113 so far on two different keyboards last week before seeing this one.
I don't have a pick, but I want to make a quick mention that one of our regulars on this show, a guy we've known for a long, long time, starting back on the Call for Help days when he was part of the Macworld crew that did Mac Tips on Tech TV, Chris Breen has left Macworld, and shock of shocks, he's going to work for Apple.
Holy cow.
Holy cow is right. His blog post, Time to Do Something Else, came out this morning. He does thank us, and I appreciate that, in the acknowledgments section. I also point you to Chris's last Mac 911 column, which is probably worth printing out and taping to your computer because he tells you how to fix every problem that will ever happen to you with your Macintosh or your iPhone. It is phenomenal. He didn't write this article when he first started Mac 911, or he would never have had to write any more posts. But he's decided since he's leaving Mac 911 at Macworld, he should do the ultimate last post, how to fix your Apple product, the last word. Chris, congratulations and good luck. And I can't wait to find out what he's up to. Do you think it might be music discovery? He is a musician after all.
Mm-hmm. Chris is a damn clever guy. He knows a lot about music. He knows. I wouldn't be shocked if it. As you might have gotten from my reaction.
You didn't know. Yeah.
And he's a friend of mine. Good. Yeah. Knows. He's also a really, really good educator. So I would not be terribly shocked if they brought him on to help to be part of that documentation education process.
Yeah, he does a lot of classes on lynda.com, and I think
he's
a guy
with a very deep cabinet of skills, and he could he's an asset to everybody. And I bet Renee is kicking himself for not getting a chance to top Apple's, I'm sure, offer to get Chris Green on.
Yeah, he already got Serenity Caldwell. He cannot have any more people. No more. He does thank you, Andy, as well in the long list of acknowledgments. We love Chris Breen and the hair of Breen, and we continue to look for great things from Chris.
I'm just thinking of the possibility of Apple hair. You know, Apple hair. It could be a whole other category.
You know, maybe that's it. Maybe the car they're building is a convertible, and they want to know what happens if men have a nice flush piece of their hair.
Chris, are you going to work? He does. He's very cagey about what he's going to be doing at Apple. In fact, he doesn't even really say the word Apple. He says a Cupertino-based technology company you may be familiar with. He says
he's going to fit in perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to fit in perfectly. Exactly. So congratulations, Chris. That's great news. Hey, thanks to you guys for being here. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com, the place to go. Don't forget iMore's really excellent debug podcast. That should be on your regular list. What are you doing this week?
We have Andy Matuchik from Khan Academy, formerly from Apple's UIKit team, now on Khan Academy. Yep, should be good.
That's great.
And we have Krista Mergan on Iterate talking about the new version of Audio Hijack.
Very good. As always, iMore.com, the place to go for the latest Mac news. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times with his drawer of gadgets. Anything you want to give a plug to?
Not particularly. If anyone has a good idea for my Wednesday column, by all means, let me know, because I'm kind of...
It's Tuesday.
I started it Monday night and realized that, no, that's not going to work out, so oh well.
Somebody in the chat room said, MacBreak Meekly in the chat room says, Chris Breen is working on the iWig. So that would be also another interest.
It's aluminum.
Aluminum. Brushed. Thank you, Andy. Great to have you. Alex Lindsay, thanks for joining us all the way from frosty Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Where are you going next?
I'm in D.C. tomorrow and then New York on Thursday and then back in Pittsburgh on Friday. And I'm going to be doing – I'm testing a new system. So I'm going to be doing an Ask Alex on Fridays. Just follow me on Twitter and I'll post the details. But it's the hardware system that mixes with our software stuff. I've got kind of to a point where I can test it. So I want to bring everybody in, talk about it and show stuff. So so just follow me on Twitter and I'll post more details on it this week.
Excellent. Excellent. And you're on Twitter as Alex Lindsay with an A, LINDSAY.
Yep, that's it.
We do MacBreak Weekly every Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. I hope you will stop by live. It's fun to watch live. You can comment in the chat room or even be in the studio audience. Four brave and hearty souls here today. Just email tickets at twit.tv and we'll put a chair for you. If there's only four of you, you get the comfy chairs. Any more than that, we're going to have to put out those hard metal chairs. So just let me know ahead of time. And, of course, if you can't watch live or be here live, you can always get on-demand versions after the fact. In fact, I do that anyway. Twit.tv/MBW is the website. Lots of subscription links there. Links also to our apps. We don't do any of them. I cannot take credit for the great apps on the all the platforms, iOS, Android, Windows, Phone, on the Roku. But our great third-party developers do a nice job, and I'm sure you'll find an app to fit your needs. Or subscribe in iTunes or whatever you use. Just make sure you get it each and every week. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.